Blog Talk Radio.
From the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, this is Larry Batson on behalf of the SRI Label Group and Wildlife Educational Services. Welcome to this magical network blog talk radio from deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America without a compass, without a map. Blog Talk Radio, the SRI Label Group and Wildlife Educational Services present Larry Batson's Wild World. For the next hour, join us as we talk to the most amazing guests. From the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson live on Blog Talk Radio. And we're back. Once again, we're back with Larry Batson's Wild World, and we're very, very excited to have our guest with us this week. All the way from sunny California, our man, Mr. Music Man himself, Shelly Leibowitz. Good evening, Shelly.
Who the hell is that?
I don't have any idea.
Mr. Batson, how are things in the wild world?
Well, it's wild. It's raining today. We had rain all night, so everybody's it's still kind of a swamp around here. But we're hoping for the best.
Remember,
you know.
It's better that it's raining out than raining in.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to confess, Dr. Day was not able to be a part of our broadcast, our initial broadcast. He had a family emergency come up.
What happened?
I know. It's not good. Not good at all. But
I hope everything's all right.
Yes. Much better. Hey, I want to tell everyone a little bit of the history of Shelly Leibowitz here on Wild World. Of course, he's with the SRI Label Group, who made it possible for us to be on Blog Talk Radio, which we appreciate so very much. But he's a who's who of the music business. I'm going to tell you that right now. From Sammy Davis Jr., the Rat Pack, Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald. He's produced jazz, blues, country, rock and roll. He also produced a concert for Bangladesh with George Harrison, and he was instrumental in getting Leon Russell to be a part of that concert. Simon and Garfunkel live in Central Park, the infamous Diana Ross concert that we all know so very, very well, and it just goes on and on.
You ought to write a book.
You should write a book. Absolutely. You did write a book. What am I saying?
You know more about me than I do, Larry.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm praying for Dr. Dave. I feel really bad. I hope everything's okay. Dr. Dave,
he'll
you're
be
listening?
All right. He might be listening.
Be
I hope
right.
so. But yes,
I had a joke for him. I was going to tell him a joke that Groucho Marx told me.
What joke was that?
Groucho said, "The horse went up to the zebra, and the zebra said, 'What do you want?' And the horse said, 'You know what I want, baby. Take off them pajamas.'"
I hope the children aren't listening.
it's not that bad even for the kids. I've got other ones we could tell. We can't tell the kids, but.
Well, I know. But, I have a copy down in on. Doing It on the Downbeat, if I can even read. The Pictorial View of My Life in Music by Shelley Leibowitz. Shelley, I think who you didn't work with would be easier to say than who you have, because it's everybody.
Well, if I was good, they probably wouldn't have had me do everybody. Just I could just concentrate on doing work with one person. But I kept trying to do it until I get it right.
Well, you've put out some amazing product, I tell you, over the years, the background of music for all of our own lives. So it's so greatly appreciated. And the SRI Label Company, the catalog that's available on the Internet is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Thank you. Well, you know, we try to make sure everybody can get some good music. You know, the one thing I'm really happy with the website is I've been set up that people can come in. They don't have to buy anything. They can listen to everything if they want to for free, and get what they, and
yeah.
if they want something, they can get it. But not like I always hated when you go to a site and you hear like a 5 or 10 second clip. You
yeah.
can't tell anything. We have set up the entire salon, you know, and I'm really
yeah.
proud of what's there. And I have to say this, you know, I've been very fortunate in my life that a lot of people have allowed me to work with them. You know, so they, you know, if it wasn't for people like Count Basie or John Lennon, I don't care who it was, you know, things wouldn't have happened. They made it possible. So,
well
they had faith in me for some reason. I'm not sure what it was. But.
Well, I really believe that I don't like to use the word karma, but I think you're just a good person. And very, very
they
talented at the same time.
They stopped making
very
karma use.
Yeah. The,
I don't know about that, but I appreciate it. Thank you. You're a kind man. Now let's talk about what's going on in the animal world.
Okay. Well, it's spring here in Clinton Falls, Indiana, and the gator ponds are now filled with wood frog tadpoles. So we'll have hundreds of wood frogs that will hopefully grow up and get out of the pond before the gators are released, which is about 3 weeks away, probably, because we're going to get snow tonight.
So you're going to be knee-deep in frogs?
We'll be knee-deep in frogs, yeah.
One year
I went and caught all the little tadpoles out of the pond, which took hours and hours and hours, and put them down in our creek. And my wife said, you just want to not do anything that particular day. I mean, what the hell about? I bet there was close to 20,000 tadpoles.
Wow.
That's a lot of frogs.
No,
we're
going to
play
junk.
A little something from one of your good friends, one of your great friends.
Okay.
You're listening to Blog Talk Radio. We're talking with Shelley Leibowitz from SRI Label Group on Blog Talk Radio on Wild World.
I'm
John Lennon, one of Shelley Leibovitz's really, really good friends. And we love to
that
hear
really
John Lennon.
That really brings me back. Yeah, it really brings me back. What a great guy. He was incredible.
It absolutely was. I know you're filled with some great John Lennon stories. Would you be more than willing to tell us one? It'd be fantastic.
Let me try to think here. I will tell you that when going back to John Sinclair had been arrested for smoking a joint, and in the old days, really heavy due to the law, and he got convicted to 20 years in prison for one joint. So John said, "This won't do." So went in his studio and recorded a song called "Free John Sinclair." And he went out and he started promoting concerts and everything, raised money, and finally got him out. But John wouldn't stand for injustice. And he loved being able to, one reason he loved New York is he's the only place he could actually walk down the street and people would just say, "Hi, John," they didn't bother him.
Yeah.
So he felt that boom. You know, we would sit in Central Park sometimes, you know, sometimes smoking weed. Or just walking around the park, and people come up and talk to him all the time. He'd stop and talk to everybody, take pictures with him, autograph stuff. Have a great time. He was just a real good guy, except when Harry Nilsson and I and John would go out for a drink.
The lost weekend.
You go out for a drink, it was like 3 days, you know?
Yes, the infamous lost weekend.
I remember once I get a phone call, and it was Harry, and he says, "I'm in town, I'm in New York." And I said, "Oh, hey, Harry, how you doing?" He says, "When we get together." I said, "Okay." He says, "Oh, I'll come over to your place. You call John, and we'll all go out." I said, "All right." And I call up, and Yoko answers the phone. And I said, "Can John come out and play?" And she said, "Oh, no, that must mean Harry's in town." So we go supposedly going out for a couple hours, come back a couple of days later.
Oh my gosh!
Who was one of those?
I have a feeling that Harry Nilsson and John Lennon were mutually impressed with one another's talents.
Oh, it's incredible. John was in England, early days Beatles. Epstein came over here for a few things, and he heard his album by this guy Harry Nilsson, and he brought it back. He brought a bunch of copies and sent back to England to the guys. And John was interviewed, and he said, "Who's your favorite American group?" Oh, he said, "Oh, Nilsson." He didn't know it was one person.
Well,
but Harry
wow.
was brilliant. Harry was just brilliant.
Well, he was.
You know, all the songs that he did, all the songs that he wrote, the hits he wrote that other people had big hits with, you know, there were enough of those. And then the point, you know, we sat out as an argument in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And Bradley saying, "Well, everybody's got a point of view." And he took out a napkin and wrote the point. And
wow.
a drawing under being the cartoon character in the TV special that was done.
That was only shown once, wasn't it?
Yeah, as far as I know, ABC shut it one time. You know, it's really sad. It's brilliant. You know, people know like Me and My Arrow and a couple of the other songs. But, you know, the whole idea of it is every, you know, it was really a great message. You know, everybody's got a point. Everybody's got a point of view. You could be different. It's okay. You know, but that was Harry. Harry was like a modern day poet laureate. You know, some of the things he wrote, just mind boggling. Well, I guess one of my favorite is The Lord Must Be in New York City. One of those great songs.
Oh, it's a great tune. Yeah.
Originally, he wrote that for the name of that movie. That he ended up doing, Everybody's Talking at Me, Midnight Cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote it to be the theme for Midnight Cowboy, and he decided, nah, they didn't want to use that as a theme, but that you got this other song recorded we could use. It was called Everybody's Talking at Me, which wasn't a song that Harry wrote, but that version is still, nobody could top it.
He didn't write that song?
No, Fred Neil wrote that. It's a wonderful song.
Oh, it is, absolutely.
But Harry's version. You know, it's like, you know, did you ever hear any of the songs that Harry did of Randy Newman? He did,
right.
He loved Randy Newman. And we did the album, Nilsson Sings Newman. It was terrific. Some of those songs are outrageously good. And then, to me, one of the, you know, aside from Nilsson Schmilsson, you know, the album, The Standard, is just incredible. And it was a matter of the label didn't want him to do it, and he just felt that he wanted to do that album, and he felt that his voice was the best it would ever be at that point in time.
Hmm.
And just incredible versions. He had such an amazing voice and such an amazing range.
Well, I remember the album, and you're absolutely correct. It is fantastic. And Harry Nilsson, my goodness, what a talent! That's
you know, what most people don't know is he walked in. The orchestra was really well rehearsed. Harry walks in with a drink in one hand, a cigarette in the other, sits down and does song after song. You know.
Well, speaking of Everybody's Talking, here's Harry Nilsson. We're with Shelley Leibowitz on Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping staring. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Like a stone. Everybody's talking at me. Can't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind.
Harry Nilsson, everybody's talking. Gosh, what a vocal range, Shelley.
An amazing vocal range. You had such a wonderful voice.
Yes,
it was incredible.
Absolutely. I'm going to throw a few names at you. And my wife, Cheryl, had a question. She said, what happens when you're going to produce somebody and you decide you don't like them?
Depends if you're getting paid to do it or if you're doing it for another reason. But when I worked for labels, sometimes they'd have me produce people that I thought was garbage. I just didn't like. Sometimes you had to do it with your job. At one point, Columbia, it was like punishment to work with Barbara Streisand in the early years because she'd just drive you crazy. She would boss you around. She wouldn't be difficult, And different people. And then if you're doing freelance work, you decide to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you just get lucky. Somebody great asks you to do something. I got really lucky with the Rat Pack,
Oh, absolutely.
Sammy Davis used to make me crazy.
What did
he
do?
To make me crazy. the first time he said to me, I've done a few things with him at Basie, and then he said to me, I was working for Roulette, I think it was like 18 or 19 years old. He says, what are you doing this weekend? I said, I don't know, I'll probably go hang out with my friends or something. He says, well, if you have no plans, why don't you just see if you can get a day off and go with me to Las Vegas? I said, let me ask my boss. I'd never been to Vegas. I went in Morris Levy. I said, Mr. Levy, is it possible I can get Friday off? He says, well, you want Friday off, kid? I said, well, Sammy Davis Jr. asked me to go to Vegas with him. He said, well, go. Have a good time. Let me know what's going on. He said, mention my name to you. You know, speaking, you can talk up roulette to everybody. I said, okay. So I go to Vegas. I had no idea. We get to the Sands. We walk in the showroom. If they're leaving luggage at the door, he says, don't worry about it, they'll put it in rooms. And Sinatra's on stage. And I had no idea.
Wow.
And we're standing in the back room, and Sammy starts heckle. And Sinatra says, I think I hear a shadow, and the shadows get the hell up here. So Sammy went up, and they did 20 minutes together. And then he comes in, and he says, I think we better get some rest. He says, I want to have a breakfast meeting. I said, okay. He said, we'll meet 10 o'clock in the morning in the coffee shop. I said, okay, great. So I go to my room, and I walk in, and I open up the door, and there's a bunch of naked showgirls in the room.
I'm a dumb kid.
I said, I'm in the wrong room. Excuse me. And the girl grabs me. She pulls me in the room. She goes, no. And she hands me a note. And the note says, welcome to Vegas. Have a good time. Signed, Sammy, Dean, and Frank. I went, oh, my God. And the next morning, I couldn't answer the coffee shop, and in a stage whisper, Sinatra says to Dean Martin, okay, Dean, you owe me $100. I told you the kid still would be able to walk.
Oh, my gosh.
And after that, I got to work with the three of them, and it was just wonderful. I learned so much from them, working with Sinatra,
I love that story you told me once, and you had a recording session set up with an orchestra, and Frank just shows up. Do you remember the story I'm talking about?
Probably. It's when we wanted the big orchestra in Capitol Records, saying, well, I wouldn't fit in Studio A or Studio B, what are we going to do? So we turned around, and we went to Warner Brothers, and we got a soundstage. We had this 80-piece orchestra set up. And Sinatra came in very well rehearsed,
Yeah.
Frank just came in, took his hat off, lit up a cigarette, poured a glass of Jack Daniels, said, okay, guys, let's get to work. And just plowed through them. It was incredible. He was amazing. But he wanted it done his way. He wanted it done right. And Frank knew what he wanted to do. He always just sit around and says, I'm just a kid from Jersey, really, But saloon singer. Started out as a singing waiter. He just loved to sing, and that's what he did. Nobody did it better. Nobody did it better than Frank. Although I had so much fun sometimes with the three of them together, but also Frank and Ella together were just sheer magic. Two of the greatest singers of all time. They adored each other. And they had two most... Well, Frank named her, gave her the name of the first lady song. Yeah.
He did. Wow.
Yeah, and she was called the Blue Eyes. So, but she had names everybody too. You know, she called Louis Armstrong Pops because he's so much older than her. She was incredible. But so many of these people, you know, you learn a lot from great talent. And that's why I always tell young talent, listen to people coming before you. Listen to the legends. They're legends for a reason. Oh, speaking of that, you have to hear Ray Brown Jr.'s new album. It is incredible.
Oh, my goodness.
Ray is he's better and better and better and better. You know, I know his mother's got to be looking down at him, just smiling ear to ear. His father, too. You know, he grew up learning from parents like that, from, you know, traveling with Ella Fitzgerald and then traveling with Ray Brown and, you know, seeing the best ways to work, learning how to deal with musicians, what it's like to work on the road and what it's like to be excellent and never settle for anything but your best. And he's doing it. The new album is starting. It just came out. It's really climbing radio charts, getting added on more and more stations. The guy's so popular all over the world now. And the album is incredible. Just incredible. I'm so proud of him.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, your label.
I know him forever.
And SRI Label Group, you have his album in your catalog, right?
Right up on, it's featured right on the front page. Click
I
on it,
I
listen
saw
to
it.
It.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. You know, and this album is recorded in Ukraine with the musicians from that part of the world, the best of the best. They clamor to work with them. And the arrangements and the album itself, the songs are terrific. I'll have to send you some stuff, Larry.
Yeah, please do, because I'd love to hear it.
I got some insight from that. I have some other stuff I just send you. My son, too. Not talking about the dirty stuff. you know what I've come across a lot of stuff, but I've come across a bunch of stuff out of John Lennon where we're doing all these different versions of Imagine, you know, about 10 different things that haven't been heard. These are work versions. I should send you a couple for you.
Yeah, I'd love to hear those. Of course, my wife Cheryl's the biggest John Lennon fan in the whole world, probably. Myself as well.
I didn't know that, so why am I talking to you?
That's a good question. All right, I'm going to throw some names at you from your book. Glenn Campbell.
Go ahead.
Glenn Campbell.
Oh, jeez, Glenn Campbell was amazing. You know, he played on the early Beach Boys sessions. You know, he worked with Jan and Dean. I have a concert with a Jan and Dean reunion special, and he was featured on there, and he came out and introduced them. You know, he was an incredible guitarist and a wonderful man. Wonderful. So, I don't know what else I can say.
Yeah, his catalog is very impressive. I mean, Galveston, Wichita Lyman, all those songs, unbelievable.
The songs Jimmy Webb wrote for him? Wonderful.
Yes,
By the Time I Get to Phoenix?
Yes.
All those songs that he wrote. And his first hit, Johnny Hartman song. What's the name of it now? Having one of those moments trying to remember name. Yeah, play Name That Tune. but he just, yeah, he was terrific. He could do anything he wanted to do. You know,
well,
even
you know,
a TV show was good.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was. I was just one day reading about the session musicians and you know, the Monkees caught a lot of slack because they didn't play their own instruments. But there were so many groups then that it was the same. They didn't play their instruments. In fact, I was so disillusioned. The Byrds, for instance, that all the instruments behind the vocals were session musicians, weren't actually the Chris Elman and David Crosby and the bunch.
Well, what happened was sometimes in some of these recordings, these bands weren't as good or as well versed working in the studio as studio musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're too busy getting high. They just couldn't cut it. Well, they weren't good enough. In the case of the Monkees, you know who played on the first couple of albums for the Monkees? It was Led Zeppelin.
Oh, really?
You know,
Jimmy Page.
Guys, yeah. Guys in a more used to studio environment is different than guys used to working in a bar. It's just
mm-hmm.
a fact of life, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you tune differently. You get the volumes. There's so many things you need to working with the microphones. And time is money. And limited time in studio is limited time in a studio. And when a record
sure.
company has a budget, and the budget's a certain amount of money, the producer's watching that clock. Because you have only a certain amount of hours after recording and a certain amount of time for mixing, and that's it. If you went over, it came out of your pocket. You know,
I know
how it was. You know.
How many times would a musician find out that they owed a studio bill?
Well, sometimes it was musicians owed a studio bill. Sometimes it was a producer.
Yeah. Oh,
it depends
on
the label. The label said, hey, if you go over with these guys, you got to pay for it.
Oh.
You know? Well, if they knew sometimes that band was going to be more difficult, then they knew the band would have to pay for it, or it was just going to be stopped. You know, stuff like that happened all the time. You know, you had years when guys would be high in a studio and writing songs in the studio. Just not the place to do it. You're supposed to have your act together before you go in the studio. You're going to record, not to rehearse, not to write. You know, even John and Paul and when he did the Beatles sessions, even when they weren't getting along well, you know, everything was done ahead of time. They went in and recorded. They might have worked on a little bit on the arrangement in the studio, who was going to do a certain thing at a certain time because something wasn't working. But they weren't sitting there writing there. You know, it's too professional.
Yeah.
One thing, if you own your own studio, you can work like that forever. No, it's all
about well,
the
Beatles, they recorded so much material so quickly. I mean, they were a music factory for the few years there.
You know, John and Paul worked really well together as writers for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They complemented one another. Paul was much more pop. John was much more rock. You put it together and you had that wonderful combination. But then certain songs, you know, you would think of maybe just one person wrote and it was the other, or it was a combination. One after 909, John wrote himself before he met Paul. You know,
yeah.
A Day in a Life was written by John. You know, you'd be surprised. It come together. And then other songs, you know, they're wonderful combinations of two of them. Hey, Jude, Paul wrote. You know, it's...
Sure.
You know, they work so well together. And no one should ever underestimate the talent of George Harrison and the songs that he wrote. You know, he just didn't get as much time as the two of them on the albums, but...
Right. Well, I always enjoyed his music. Always. From the Meet the Beatles on. I mean, I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't let him record more, but...
Well, because the hits were coming out of John and Paul
initially.
And it started out with John's group, basically. It all started out as for the Quarrymen. You know, it's from the Quarrymen to the Silver Beatles to the Beatles.
Yeah.
I have a great recording that George did of something, doing it in a version Sinatra would use as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's a riot, you know. You had Jeff Lynne playing guitar with him, and Jeff Lynne forgets chords, and it's just a... Oh, it was kind of funny.
Mm. Yeah.
But,
okay, here's another one for you, Shelley. Allman Brothers
okay.
Band. Allman Brothers.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. You know, the brothers themselves were incredible. And Greg, you know... you know, great B3 player, guitar player, great vocalist. But his brother, my God, Dwayne was amazing. You know, and he played with Eric Clapton together. There's a wonderful sound. Incredible.
Oh,
and they were great guys, you know. And when they came in with their Southern Rock, the first time we had them, I had them in the Fillmore in New York City. And they just blew everybody away, shocked everyone. You know, it was just so incredibly good and so incredibly powerful. You know. But there's a
I had read in Bill Graham's book that at the Fillmore, when they had the rehearsals / sound checks, that they were about the only band that the merchants along that street actually come out of the stores to listen to them.
Yeah, they did. Some just closed the street. Second Avenue, we had the doors open. It's if I remember correctly, the air conditioning wasn't working or the heating wasn't working. Something would had the doors open to let air in. And they were playing. They were playing really loud. And along Second Avenue there in Manhattan and 7th Street, people, all the little shop owners came out and all the little psychedelic shops that were there and everything else. People were in the street listening. Well, there's another thing. One night when you had Sly and Family Stone in there and we couldn't get to the most stage, 4 o'clock in the morning, they came out the door trying to get the crowd to farm out, doing Higher. Out on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning, man. You know, and Saturday night, it was odd days, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of stories, you know, so many stories. So many great, you know, the diversity of music and the growth of music in a period of time in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s was probably one of the most important times musically, as far as I'm concerned. The birth of things.
I agree.
You put together Blood, Sweat, and Tears, the first time there's a horn section in a rock band, you know, and a blending of rock, jazz, and blues, and then bringing country into some of it, you know, and with the, you know, and people like the hard-working bar bands that broke through, like there's Bruce Springsteen, the George Thorogood, in the Village with Debbie Harry and Blondie, and the New York Dolls, everybody coming out at the same time, you know. It just, you know, there was just so much going on at once. At the same time, there's very pop stuff happening. It's, you know, there wasn't, it was much more diversified and open to be creative as a musician. Now there's too much pressure from record companies for everybody to do the same thing, for everyone to write. You know, and go back years ago, there was songwriters and there were musicians and singers. Everybody wasn't supposed to write songs because everybody's not capable of writing a great song. You know, and that's why certain songs become standards and the others become, you know, something you'll never even hum in a shower 20 years from now. You know, it's the way it is. Duke Ellington said it right. Duke Ellington said to me once, there's two kinds of music, good music and the other kind.
Isn't that the truth?
It is.
Okay, here's one for you. He had a pretty short career, but what a great career, Jim Croce.
Oh, my goodness. Jim was a sweetheart. He was a kind troubadour, old-fashioned. He's the kind of guy that 100 years before would have been traveling town to town telling stories. You know, he really would have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to say I love you in a song, Bad, Bad, Leroy Brown. You know, I got a name. You know, those songs are just wonderfully written, wonderfully crafted. And his style was so unique, and he was a genuine guy. There was nothing put on. There was nothing fake. There was nothing phony. He was wonderful. He was gracious. He was grateful and very respectful of everyone around him. You know, it's just a shame his career was so short. You know.
Well, I had a magical voice.
Oh, there was a magic about him. You know, it's truly a magic about him. And his son, AJ, is like his dad.
Mm-hmm.
He really is. He's got that kindness. He's got that, you know, there's something, you know, wonderful about him as well. Sometimes the apple doesn't fall off the tree. And sometimes it's just rotten to the core, you know.
Oh, that's so true.
I'm grateful. My boy is a terrific young man, as yours. You know, why we don't know.
Yeah.
It shows God's got, I guess.
Speaking of kind of to go from Jim Croce to Joe Cocker.
Oh my goodness.
That's a pretty.
Michael was amazing. He really was. You know, he was such a terrific talent. You know, from the beginning to the end. I think what you wanted to talk about is when he came over and he got arrested and ended up doing Mad Dogs. Well, the
first
one was Woodstock. He blew everybody away at Woodstock. And when he came to do his tour, and his band didn't realize or wasn't smart enough for the most part, any of them, that you do not carry drugs on an international flight. You did not try to smuggle your drugs into the United States. So they all got arrested.
Yeah.
Has a tour in the band. Yeah. So that's when he round up Leon Russell and a bunch of other people and put together this wonderful band and did Mad Dogs and Englishmen. You know, and it was Mad Dogs and the Crazy Englishmen. And it was terrific. Very little rehearsal.
It was.
And it was just fantastic. As a matter of fact, my son is sitting right underneath the platinum record of Mad Dogs and Englishmen.
Oh, that's one. And my favorite track on the album is...
And you know what? It was great people. It all came together. And some people who started as background singers from Rita Cooley, John Down, became stars from that. You know, just to... You know, Leon could put together a band as well as anybody. And people forget what kind of a great songwriter he was. You know, what kind of girls Leon had. You know, there's so many great talents. You know, it is what it is. You know, it's people that love what they do, you know. And hey, change the subject for a moment. But, you know, we're talking about people. You have to be grateful for people and what they do. I'm really happy to know you and respectful of what you do. Because I love animals, as most people do. And what you do for them is incredible. You know, it's important for young people and the kids to learn. And who's teaching them? Who's doing it? But this, all they keep doing is cutting the funds for this stuff. And if anybody
that's true. And some of the schools, they've got funding, and they really can't afford to have any types of programs in because,
I hope that people listening will get, you know, will do something about it, and you know, make donation to wildlife, you know, to your show, to your organization, so you can keep doing what you do and make sure these animals are fed and these kids are taught. You know, hands-on for kids is, you know, the way they learn. They have no respect for an animal if they've never been around. They don't know what it's like, you know? What I see, their mothers scream when I see a spider. You know, give me a break. You know?
Mm-hmm.
My mother used to scream until they thought their leg had broke. But that was another story, you know?
Well, after those kind words, if anyone would like to contribute, you can go to my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and there's a donation button. You can send us a donation. So, and we do appreciate them because, Shelley, as you know, we have 5 full-grown tigers to feed, and that alone is...
Larry, I hope people will do that. You know, I'd be happy to give some songs away or anything else anybody wants if they can help you. You know, we can work something out. Be happy to do it.
I know you would. You've always been very supportive, very kind to us, and we... my wife loves some Shelley Leibovitz, I mean...
Excuse me?
When she found out SRI Label was going to be an underwriter for our program here on Blog Talk Radio each week, she just was ecstatic. I mean, so we've been very excited to get this rolling. Very excited.
It sounds like you're getting lucky. No, never mind.
Well, we'll see. Now, not only producing records and producing concerts, but you also... You talk about a lot of stories. You toured with the Rolling Stones.
That was one time too many. That was a short time. It was a short time because in those years, I knew I would not. I was not going to survive. I was just not going to survive. And everybody was too stoned. Things were too crazy. And you know, people say, you know, it's amazing that, you know, Keith Richards is still alive. And I'm thinking, it's amazing I'm still alive.
Well, that's what it is. Housekeeper once say she anticipates coming into the house and finding him past tense. She says that for years that always bothered her, but in his older age though, he's kind of straightened up a little bit.
The best was why he got straightened out. He was dating Patty Hansen, the supermodel, America's first supermodel, and he asked her to marry. And she said no, and he said why, and she said I won't marry a junkie.
Wow.
She said, you want to get married? Straighten up your act. He got clean and sober.
Wow.
And then the best. They got married, you know, families from Staten Island, New York. Got married in this little church in Staten Island. I won't forget it. The Elkingville Lutheran Church. And look out in the church. On one side, all of these gorgeous Norwegians. All blonde, blue-eyed, gorgeous. Everyone dropped dead gorgeous. The men, the women, all of them. Patty's family, they were all spectacularly beautiful. And the other side of the church was death. It was the rock and roll group. It was Ozzy Osbourne, Mick Jagger. And the minister said to me, he said, this is like, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, it's like, I'm looking over here. I don't know which side. You know, is it heaven? Is it hell? What's going on here? And he said, marrying this gorgeous princess, the prince of evil, you know, because Keith looked like hell, you know, and Patty was pristine and gorgeous. And, you know, it's just amazing. And that's what changed his life. And he's a terrific guy. So I can be a wonderful talent. Keith is a terrific guy. So I'm real happy for him. And
well, I'd always thought you.
They're going back out again and doing more live shows. I know, loud. Not about money. They just love doing it.
That's
incredible.
That's it.
You know, they made, I think, the last tour about $40, $50 million a man on the last tour.
Goodness gracious.
You know, so they don't need the money. They're very charitable. They give money to lots of charities quietly and everything else. And then Ronnie Wood said, you know, we're thinking about doing a reunion of the Faces. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, they're talking about Rod coming back and doing a Faces tour.
Mm-hmm.
I said, my God, that would be a big deal. But, you know, I think they're getting to the point it's all sounds good, but the older you get, the harder it gets. Well, in some ways. In other ways, it's another story. Grouch said, having sex when you're like in your 90s is like shooting pool with a rope.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So when he says something open to Grouch stories, you know. It was so funny. I had lunch with him. He's like 91, 92 years old. He was sitting in the church and all these girls keep coming over and kissing him on the cheek. And he's patting him on the ass. And I said, Groucho, you're in your 90s. What's with all these young girls? He says, you're young as young as you feel. And that's why it's important to feel up young girls. Silly thing. He came out to California, tried to join the Hillcrest Country Club, and he went as a guest. And they said, sorry, Mr. Marsh, you have to leave. There's a restricted club. We don't allow Jews. He said, well, my daughter's only half Jewish. Can't you go in the pool up to her waist?
Oh, my God. Dr. Day doesn't know what he missed this week.
I guess one of my things with Groucho is when he had the TV show, he had his woman on and she had 8 children. And he said, you have 8 children? She says, yes, Groucho. And he says, why do you say so many kids? She says, well, I love my husband. He says, well, I love my cigar, but I take it out of my mouth every once in a while. Now, he did that on television when it was live. There's no delay.
Yeah.
There was no anything. So it went out, and he said, they thought maybe we would get him off TV. No. He was a funny, funny man.
Yeah, the genius. Yeah, he absolutely was.
Yeah.
Shelly, gosh, we appreciate it so much. What a wonderful guest you always are.
And, you know, hope people will get out their credit cards and get on your website and make a donation. And if
we want to,
we can work something out. You know, you let me know who donates, and we'll give them a code to get some free songs or something.
Well, that'd be fantastic.
And anybody want to come by, check out the website. If something you want, you do something for Larry, I'll do something for you. How's that?
Wow. Wow. That's fantastic. My goodness. Amazing guest. And to leave today, we're going to go out with one of Shelly's best buddies here on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody. Thank you.